As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. It is our post-first round spectacular. First round still going on. The Green Bay Packers pick at number 28 is in. As we speak, only one quarterback has been taken, Kenny Pickett. We will have the full measure of the first round by the time we finish this podcast. David Ubben joins me. And David, it's been, it feels like there haven't been a lot of fireworks in this draft, really, because it was all defense at the beginning. Again, the one quarterback thing, which I probably shouldn't surprise us because nobody was all that fired up about this group of quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. And then you had Kayvon Thibodeau going 5 when people thought he might slide. You had Jermaine Johnson maybe going a little later. I feel like the Ravens kicked some butt with Kyle Hamilton and Tyler Linderbaum. Like the team that's usually good taking the players that are just good.
Yep. Andy, I got a lot of theories and a lot of takes that I'm sure we may get to on this glorious evening, but I had the Ravens written down. They strike me as a team. Obviously, you saw Kyle Hamilton slide. Tyler Linderbaum kind of went where we thought, but
yeah,
the teams
head.
Yeah, but the teams that we see, sort of having success. My hottest take is that in a lot of cases in the draft, the players matter, don't get me wrong, but they seem a lot less important than, in many cases, the organization. I think that there are a lot of alternate universes out there where really good players went to really inept organizations and their careers suffered, and maybe players that weren't as great as we thought go to good organizations that allow them mm-hmm. to flourish. But ultimately, you see a team in the Ravens tonight, Kyle Hamilton, Tyler Linderbaum, picking players who are good at football, whose workouts raise some questions. Kyle Hamilton, obviously, with the speed.
Yeah.
Or being, a center at a quote-unquote less than valuable position. But ultimately, drafting players who are good at football and not just good at working out seems like a good strategy, Andy. And I think
it's like the Kenny
don't get
Powers.
Me started on the
I'm not trying to be the best at exercising.
Yeah, don't get me started on the gaming the system of spending 3 months after the season learning how to do shuttle drills and forward, like the ridiculousness of that whole exercise and the emphasis put on these numbers. Again, Andy, not to be watch the tape guy, but watch the tape. Those two guys can play football.
Yeah. No, and sometimes being watch the tape guy doesn't work because there are people who play really well in college mm-hmm. and for whatever reason, like usually it's because they're not fast enough to compete
or
at the NFL
enough.
Level. And so Hamilton had the slower 40 time. But the thing is, Hamilton played against elite competition at Notre Dame and looked fine. Like, he was not embarrassed against elite
exactly.
competition.
You watch him play football. Andy, was there one time over the last couple seasons that you watched Kyle Hamilton and you had to wince?
Because no,
you're like,
never.
I don't
know. Not even once.
Exactly. Not one time. So again, Andy, people got to watch the tape sometimes. I think people overthink this so much. And I think, listen, we don't have time to get into all the ridiculousness of the draft, but the amount of moving and sliding that happens from January until April, late April, when no one's playing games at all, again, the overthinking is so classic because you have so much time. I think, honestly, I think the NFL would be in better shape if they did the draft like the first week of February.
How cool would it be? And you can't do this. And obviously, the NFL has done a good job making this an event, making this, you know, and placing it at a point in the calendar where it becomes a huge event. But it, yeah, if they just had the draft, so the national championships game is Monday, and they did the draft on Tuesday.
Yeah,
like, it'd be like, or like the baseball draft where they actually have the draft
like simultaneously
during Super games Regionals are going on. Or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
Like, maybe not that squashed, but yeah, I think there's just classic overthinking, and you know, there's just so many silly things about the draft between the conversation and the interviews and, you know, hand size discussions that may or may not be relevant and all these things that come up. I'm just a believer in drafting good football. And Andy, here, this is another thought I had tonight watching the draft and thinking about this. I think, I don't know if this is a story that we should do, you know, in the wake of the draft. Maybe this is something that we save for 11 months from now. But doesn't it seem to you that there are some schools that are way more reliable than others? And for the sake of an argument, Trent Richardson aside, we can start with Alabama.
Yeah.
But if you were a front office and you just said, you know what? We're just going to draft Bama guys. We're just going to draft Georgia guys. Wouldn't the hit rate improve if you were a front office in doing that? If you just found some schools?
It would seem so. And I mean, the Ravens maybe were kind of like that with Bama guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jonathan Allen.
I think there's something to that.
CJ Mosley.
Less think. My thought here is less thinking, I think, would do NFL teams a lot better in some of these decisions.
Yeah, Marlon Humphrey. At least defensively, the Ravens are kind of do that. So.
Yeah, I'd like to see, Andy, I'm curious if you have any thoughts on the number of schools that seem to be the most reliable versus the least reliable. I think the least reliable, not specifically a school, but it seems like all the offensive guys coming out of that Baylor system, we've seen a long line of guys dating back to Jason Smith.
Offensive linemen coming out of that system. Yeah,
Jason Smith, Danny Watkins, all those guys, it did not go well for them. First rounders that flopped out. A lot of receivers, Corey Coleman. Mm-hmm. You know, the only one, weirdly enough, that I think has had a nice career in theory, or at least proved he could play, is Josh Gordon. And right. He spent as much time, career looked like.
Yeah.
Yeah. But ultimately, he's the only guy that's had some success. Now, obviously, he's had his own issues separate from the, you know, the actual sport itself.
The football field has never been the problem.
Yes, exactly. So that's, I'd be curious if anyone jumps out to you besides the usual suspects as places that just seem to have an incredibly low bust rate. I want to do this story, Andy, mostly because I'm just curious. I hope we're not giving away the cow for free.
Iowa is one that I kind of wonder about.
And
it gets more complex because remember the report that came when Iowa did the internal investigation into the accusations of racism and other things in the program. One of the things that came out when they got rid of Chris Doyle, the strength coach, was that the strength staff would just kind of crap all over the guys they didn't think kind of fit in. And that wasn't necessarily all race-based because it sounds like that happened to George Kittle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he would probably have been drafted higher if they'd said nicer things about him. But
yeah,
but the thing is, look at the guys that they've put out. They seem to be fairly reliable, especially the ones that are drafted fairly early. Like Tristan Wirfs, right on to a Super Bowl winning team as a starter, a very effective starter, Super Bowl winning team. The tight ends obviously have panned out for the most part, but you can go back to with the offensive linemen, go back to like Marshall Yanda. So Tyler Lindebaum going to the Ravens. Marshall Yanda, Iowa guy, going with the Ravens. Like, they're all Ferentz guys, obviously, because he's been the head coach since 2000.
It's a far less exact science if you're talking about guys moving up. But I do think, Andy, like, so last year, right, if Zach Wilson was playing for the Patriots and Mac Jones was playing for the Jets, do we not think that the conversation on those two guys would be completely reversed?
Yeah. Now, would the Patriots have picked Zach Wilson?
Great question. That's a fair question. But I think ultimately, in the NFL, when it comes to draft reliability, and competency. And the Patriots aren't a great example, especially the skill positions and some of those guys that they've picked.
Their first round hit rate's not great.
No, but there are some teams who are. You know, we've talked about the Ravens on here a little bit. You know, I'd have to look at much. I mean, obviously, I don't cover the NFL. But I think
the Steelers seem to have a pretty good, reliable
hit rate. Going to competent, well-organized organizations just seems to be one of the more reliable indicators. And it seems like really good players can go to disastrous situations and end up having disastrous careers that I'm not sure is quite their fault.
Right.
And that's to me what jumps out. And I'm like, going to like the Jets and the Jags, I kind of feel sorry for them.
Yeah. I mean, how much have you heard the phrase ruin Trevor Lawrence?
Yeah.
Like, and we don't know if the Jags are going to ruin Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence might be just fine under new management. We'll see.
Could be.
But how much of it is, wow, Cole Strange from Chattanooga, first round, going to the Patriots.
There you go, Andy. Chattanooga's finest.
There you go. I talked to Cole Strange at the Senior Bowl. Very nice guy.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't. When I did that Chattanooga story a couple years ago, I don't remember him.
So he was doing. Much. I want to say he was looking at service academies. Was a tight end kind of sized guy, and then went to Chattanooga, moved to O-line, and then the athleticism stayed even as he got bigger.
Shout out to Rusty Wright and his staff. Great guy, great staff. Chattanooga, what a place.
Yeah, and Bill Belichick taking him, so there you go. That would be general manager, capologist, offensive coordinator, and defensive coordinator Bill Belichick taking Cole Strange.
Some mixed draft results, but he's done okay in the win-loss column. Historically, so
okay, he's all right.
We'll give him a benefit of the doubt there, but yeah, Andy, it feels to me, not to go all fatalist. I feel like when we have these podcasts, we get a bit too existential, but it feels like the idea that you control your own fate as a draftee just feels somewhat like a fool's errand. It's like if you're going to the Steelers or you're going to the Patriots, you're going to these organizations that have their stuff together versus somewhere where the coach is going to get fired in a year and a half and the coach hates the GM and the GM is trying to sabotage the coach and all these places.
And that's what amazes me, David, the difference between 32 and 33 in terms of what that means for your life, because the money isn't completely different. If you're drafted in the first round, the team has a fifth-year option. You're going to hit free agency in the fifth year if you get drafted in the second round. But assuming no trades, assuming that the team drafting at 32 was the best team the year before and the team drafting at 33 was the worst team the year before, like, you could go to the best organization or the worst organization in the league.
Yeah.
And the difference is one pick. Like, exactly. It is crazy.
So Andy, that's my draft downer take. That jumped out to me is congratulations to all these guys, and I'm sorry to the guys who went to
draft nihilism. I'm sorry sometimes you wound up a Jacksonville Jaguar.
I will say, Andy, I feel bad that Mr. Stars Matter is not here. Four of the top seven picks, five-star prospects. Yeah, I don't know what the numbers are through the first round, but. You know, this is the time of year, Andy, especially when the draft is over, that we get to hear about all the 153 stars that got drafted. That always ignores the point that there's like 25 stars in every class.
There's 32 5-stars, and there are roughly 1,700 3-stars. Yes.
So I look forward to some coach or draft analyst tweeting that and getting retweeted 9,000 times and Ari angrily having to quote tweet it for the eighth year in a row. It is what it is.
If Ari is tweeting about that this weekend, I'm very worried because Ari is getting married this weekend. Now,
are we going to put that past him, Andy? I'm not.
Not at all. I wouldn't put it past him to do it during the ceremony. Like,
yeah.
Do you think they wrote their own vows and at some point Ari will call Britt a 5-star can't miss prospect?
Surely. I mean, it would be a betrayal of his own heart were he to not, Andy. Would that not be the case?
As his and her family members who have no idea what that means look on in horror.
That sounds about right. That sounds about right. I think about my own vows, Andy. I think between my wife's family and my family, friends excluded, there might be one person who cares or keeps track of college football. So I might have had a similar result. I need to get a breakdown of the Ari and Britt family tree and who is tracking college football.
I don't think there's any of them. Now Ari's dad is a devoted podcast listener, so he's it, all stars matter all the way. So he understands.
Hello, Mr. Wasserman. But you're enjoying the show.
Everybody else, I don't know about. So that, you know, I got married so young, we didn't realize we were allowed to do anything different. we got married in a church. We had the reception in a hotel ballroom. Like, then we went on our honeymoon. We did all the things you're supposed to do. And, you know, we got to the honeymoon, watched two people get married on a dock within 5 minutes of getting there. And we're like, we really screwed this up.
I'm torn on the big wedding stuff, Andy. We got married at a biblical museum in Dallas. Shout out to it was right next to North Park over there off of Northwest Highway. And then you move out into the ballroom for like a hors d'oeuvre situation, and then they turn the room, the actual big ballroom, from a ceremony area into a...
Oh, you didn't even have to go anywhere.
No, you didn't have to go anywhere, which was nice because we had a lot of out-of-town guests. So that was, goodness, 9.5 years ago, Andy. It's been a while.
We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I am hopeful that the Wasserman nuptials go a bit like a Steelers draft, Andy. How did you feel about the Kenny Pickett sort of crying into his cell phone, one of the more memorable moments of the evening, getting to stick in Pittsburgh? That's got to be really cool.
Doesn't really,
that's the one that's going
to
stick
with
me.
Doesn't he have to change parking spots?
Yeah.
How often does that happen?
That's really a weird... There's so few college programs that are so locked into, relating to the pro aspect. And you look at Pitt. I mean, I'd like to know how many Pitt players the Steelers have drafted ever. It has to be a very low number. I don't feel like I remembered that. That's certainly not in the first round. It's certainly not a quarterback.
Here's the thing. Them picking him tells me, and I don't know what, because that's, I've been kind of non-committal on Kenny Pickett throughout this process. I'm scared because there was only 1 year of the really great production, and he was playing extensively the other years. It wasn't like he wasn't playing. So what was the kind of the differentiating factor? But the fact that they've been basically in the same building the entire time. So they know how he works. They know how he interacts. They know how he is with his teammates. That level of confidence in him to take him there, given all they know about him, I think that speaks pretty highly of him.
I think some of the commentary, the high floor, low ceiling, I think is probably about where I land on Kenny Pickett. But I think he was the best quarterback I saw that was drafted in this draft class last year. And I think it's because when I'm thinking about being a great NFL quarterback, the most important thing that I want in a guy is when you try to throw the ball, does it go where you wanted it to go? I think some
sometimes
of the process.
It is good to simplify things like that.
Yeah, I think the processing stuff, I think that can be fixed. I think different systems can help guys. But the one thing that you don't see get fixed very often is accuracy. And if you've got that, I think you can fix some of the other stuff.
Yeah.
And so I really agreed with a lot of the analysis with the quarterbacks this year. I didn't see a guy in this draft class that made me go, wow. I didn't see one.
Neither did the NFL teams, by the way.
Exactly.
Because the Falcons could have taken a developmental guy and said, Marcus Mariota, you're our starter this year, and then this is our quarterback of the future. The Panthers could have taken someone. So I think that tells me Baker Mayfield will go somewhere. Probably Carolina. Jimmy Garoppolo probably at some point after he, because I know he had to have surgery. So when he's healed up, that he's probably headed somewhere too. But and I look at that the QB class of 2023, David, I don't blame these teams for being skittish with this bunch.
They're coming. But I think in this class, Pickett was number one for me. I think I'd actually go Carson Strong number two in terms of guys that I think can have a great career.
His and I think knee Bailey Zappe is the might issue. Be my number People three. Are worried about what that's going to be like long term. Mm-hmm. I think Malik Willis has the highest ceiling in terms of just...
I would agree with that.
Yeah, raw ability. But he's never been in an offense like the offenses he'd be expected to play in the NFL. So you take him, you have to quote-unquote redshirt him. For lack of a better term.
Tweak your offense. Don't try to force a square peg into a round hole. I mean, you don't have to do something as dramatic as what the Ravens did with Lamar Jackson, but you have to do maybe something a little bit like what the Chiefs did and add some concepts and do some things that he does well and put some people around him, obviously, that can figure that out. It looks at this point like Malik Willis is going to be a day two guy, it sounds like.
Daxton Hill to the Bengals. So they do go defense. That was the thought, you know, that they were feeling pretty good about where they were offensively. I would have loved Linderbaum there, although it sounds like maybe they wouldn't have taken him if he'd been there, but he was gone anyway. So Daxton Hill and shore up a secondary that – they've got good players there. Obviously, they made it to the Super Bowl, but their young core is on offense. So this gives them some younger talent on defense.
Yeah,
I'm with you on the quarterbacks though, and this Bruce Feldman and I talked about this the other day about look, Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, those are going to be the headliners. I think mm-hmm. C.J. Stroud maybe more because of size and arm strength and everything else. But both of those guys are gonna excite NFL teams. And then I don't really know who the other guys are gonna be. I think that will come out as the season goes on. Bruce likes Will Levis to come out as kind of a dark
horse. The tools
horse.
Are there. The production needs to be better, but the tools, right. You watch him and you're like, oh, yeah.
But playing in an offense with a lot of NFL concepts, mm-hmm. Liam Cohen came from the Rams last year. He leaves. The new OC comes from the 49ers, so you have the...
Yep.
The McVay tree, you have the Shanahan tree, which is really the same tree, but you have a guy who runs, at least part of the hottest offense in the NFL. So that makes sense to me. Tyler Van Dyke at Miami is one that I think they'll look at and go,
I like his upside like this
way,
year. He's got
like the way
it.
He looks. yeah,
he's got to do it. We saw flashes of it this year. We saw for a few games this year. Do it over the course of the season and do it big, because you've got, again, the pieces around you. Obviously, Mario Cristobal has had some success with quarterbacks and seeing guys do some big things. So we'll see. Andy, should we talk about the receivers?
Yes. They're all
so
good.
I thought,
I like them all.
Yeah, I'm with you on this. I think all these guys are game breakers. But I really did think coming in that Drake London was the best guy. I thought he was the best player, best receiver in the country last year. I think unfairly because he got hurt around Halloween. Well,
he also wasn't playing with as much firepower as all these other guys were. Look at who's throwing.
People forgot about him.
Look at who's throwing Jameson Williams and Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave the ball.
Yep.
You know,
for what, top five picks next year, so he's doing that
exactly.
Ultimately, I think Drake London is a fantastic player. I've loved him, since I've seen him. A lot of Pac-12 After Dark, I've kept my eye on him.
I love but watching all these him Ohio drag guys, like seven people.
Yeah,
he'll catch
all
a pass
Ohio State
over the
guys,
middle,
yeah.
and defenders will just continue to pile on top of him, and he will continue moving. And I just love watching that.
Andy, the only receiver who had a bad night, Mr. Treylon Burks.
Is that bad? You thought
yes,
that was bad?
Bad. Yes,
why?
It's bad.
They traded AJ Brown, and he is very physically similar to AJ Brown.
But now he's going to be compared to AJ Brown. He can't. He is AJ Brown's replacement. He can't just walk in and be Treylon Burks. He's going to be compared. Well, we gave up this guy that everybody loved that was a stud. The Titans are waiting forever to get a great receiver. They get one. Everyone, you know, is, especially after the way the playoffs ended last year, pretty spicy about Tannehill. And you walk in there, and quite frankly, Andy, we talked about it earlier in the show, he's coming from that Baylor tree where you're not running NFL routes that don't really translate. It might take you a little while, you know, if at all, to be able to be a competent, productive NFL receiver. But when they trade this beloved freak ahead of you, like 30 minutes before you get picked, 20 minutes before you get picked, that's tough, Andy. Well, I don't envy him having to walk in there.
I will push back a little bit on the college offense thing. AJ Brown played in Hugh Freeze's offense at Ole Miss, which also does not, it is not the same thing as you're going to play in the NFL. It is not the same route tree kind of situation. So it's possible to adjust to that. Now, the other question I have with Treylon Burks is, can you do some Cordarrelle Patterson, Deebo Samuel type things with him?
Well, if you don't, you're wasting his ability, quite frankly. You have to be creative. And especially if you're in the Titans' shoes, you can't just ask Derrick Henry to carry the ball 400 times every season. That's just not something that you can do if you want to have him, you know, not run all the tread off of his tires. Well, now you got a guy in Treylon Burks that can do some things and take some of that load off of of Derrick Henry's shoulders, and I think that's, you know, you got to be able to use that. But ultimately, Andy, if I'm a first round pick, I want to come in and be my own person. I don't want to have to be someone's replacement or someone's that's going to be constantly compared to me. And comparing a kid who hasn't done anything to AJ Brown, which is going to happen, that's a rough situation.
It is,
all the receivers, I think he had the
big
worst
shoes to fill for sure.
Spot.
So Lewis Seen closes out the first round. The safety from Georgia goes to the Vikings. So David, five first-round picks on that Georgia defense last year. N'Kobe Dean still yet to go. I imagine he gets his name called very early Friday.
Yeah.
Jalen Carter will be a probably top 10 pick this time next year. There will be other players from that defense who are probably also drafted very high. Are we starting to get a picture of just how good that defense really was?
I mean, I think, Andy, looking back, I guess, you know, nobody really talked about it. Nobody really saw it, but I guess Georgia did have a pretty good defense.
One of the most
overlooked stories probably of all of last season. But, I mean,
they were very dominant in an era when we thought no defense could ever be dominant again.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I tweeted this out, Andy, but I've kind of made my run around the league this spring and talked to some coaches, and you know, I kind of talk to him and say, hey, you know, who jumps out to you? Who scares you? Who kind of all that stuff? And some of those conversations inevitably turn to Georgia's defense. And when you talk about when they talk about the guys from Georgia's defense last year and moving forward, it's like a different coach will talk about a different guy. Someone will talk about Jordan Davis. Someone will talk about, we couldn't do anything laterally on N'Kobe Dean. He just erased everything. You heard a little bit of Quay Walker. You heard a lot of Jalen Carter, especially as he's moving forward. Did not hear a lot of Trayvon Walker, I have to say. But, you know, we'll see as we move forward. But I think that's the crazy thing about that Georgia defense, Andy, is, you know, we saw it proven obviously in the draft tonight. Not that anybody was doubting it, but just how you watched them last year and you saw you could just say, wow, this is an insane group. Mm-hmm. We have not seen anything like this in a long time. They drew a lot of comparisons to 11 Bama. I think, you know, with the SEC championship, the way that played out might have cost them their unofficial title as the best defense in history, but certainly one of the best ever. And Andy, fair or not, how all those guys' pro careers play out, kind of like we saw with the early 2000s Miami teams. If all these guys prove to be studs, they can kind of actually, I think, go back and rewrite some of that history when you see, well, if they had five all-pros on that defense, well, they might be able to earn that spot as, hey, this is the best defense that college football has ever seen.
Yeah, it is. The numbers bear it out, especially in this era of offense.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and I think that's where I think people did overlook when you tried to compare them to 2011 Bama, is that's a totally different era of SEC defense. And for them to do that this year, especially with the kind of quarterbacks and the kind of offenses that we've seen, but you know, between Arkansas, who they just absolutely demolished, I don't think they didn't play Ole Miss, did they? Georgia, they didn't play
they did
Ole Miss
not,
last
no.
year. Alabama, more so in the national championship game, of course.
I think Alabama exploited how little their starters had to play in the first game. They went fast on them. They got them tired. And I think Georgia made sure that didn't happen again the next time, that that they were ready for that.
Hilariously, the Clemson game showed us nothing, but...
yeah.
But well, man...
It showed us the Georgia defense was not going to allow many points against an offense that wasn't all that great. So
yeah,
but
and they didn't for the whole season.
And we didn't know what the Clemson offense was going to be until we watched it. The Georgia Tech game was the one where I realized, oh my, it may just be that Clemson's offense is not very good this year. So we'll be right back after these words.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
David, there was a college story that broke, and it's not a college football story, but it's a college basketball story that more than likely will find its way to college football sooner rather than later, that I want to talk about, because I felt like this was kind of taking over my Twitter timeline as the first round went on. Mostly, I mean, this is what we do. This is what we cover, and it has a bigger impact on what we cover. So... did you notice, because this made my eyes pop the other day, when Nigel Pack, who's a basketball player who was transferring from Kansas State, he was considered one of the best players in the transfer portal this offseason, he goes to Miami. John Ruiz, who is a lawyer down there in South Florida, who created this company called Life Wallet, basically, it seems like, to create a platform to hire athletes from the University of Miami to advertise for it. So
who's a billionaire? We should know.
Yeah. Yes. To create an NIL NIL platform, for lack of a better term. He tweets that he has signed Nigel Pack to a 2-year $800,000 deal. And I was like, that's really, and because I'm coming off writing that Texas A&M story about its collective where the people running it tell me they don't want any attention, they don't want anybody to know what's going on, they don't want to talk about any deals. And this deal is just being announced publicly.
I believe he tweeted it, if I'm not mistaken.
He did, he tweeted it, yes. So, on Thursday night, in the middle of the NFL draft, the agent for Isaiah Wong, who was Miami's best player this past year, an all-ACC type player.
Major star turn in the tournament as well.
Yeah.
Demolished Auburn.
Yes. Remember, this team went to the Elite Eight.
Mm-hmm.
So his agent says, Isaiah would like an NIL deal that better reflects his position as the leader of an Elite Eight team. And remember, the deadline to enter the transfer portal and play somewhere else next school year is Sunday. Now, Isaiah Wong has also done the enter the NBA draft, but don't forfeit your eligibility thing. So clearly he is using every piece of leverage he has. But this is an issue that we talked about might happen. And, you know, everybody assumed was going to happen at some point. And now here it is. Somebody got, you know, got the shiny new toy, and there was somebody sitting there with a deal who was already on the team that says, wait a second, I'm the most important person on this team. Why don't I have the best deal on this team? This happens in pro sports all the time, by the way. This is how holdouts happen. Mm-hmm. In college, you don't have to hold out. Now you can just go somewhere else.
Well, this is sort of the tension right now as college football, we'll focus on football because these same tensions are happening. Because what is happening is you have players who have done something and have been on campus. They're getting good NIL deals. Well, Andy, first of all, I think we need to restructure. I mean, the concept of even saying an NIL deal, I think, is disingenuous to what we're even really talking
about. It is. They're being paid. Better pay.
Yeah, I don't think that we need to go all the way to pay for play because it's not as clean and simple as that. That's not what it is, but they're being paid, okay?
Yeah, really care. You can call pay for play if you want. Like, I'm not the NCAA cops. I don't care.
Well, it's not about that. It's just pay for play is not exactly what it is. It's probably in spirit close, but pay for play, you're not collecting checks from the university. Anyway, Nomenclature aside, so what we're talking about here. So what is happening right now is players that have proven themselves and done some things but are already on campus, wearing the uniform, all those things, are getting pretty good deals. They're making good money. Six figures, good money. These are not uncommon. But what is happening also, Andy, and we've written about this, mm-hmm. is guys that are being recruited and are, Andy, they're not being induced, right? Surely not.
Again, but I don't care. I don't work for the NCAA, so whatever you want.
Aren't you a candidate for the new NCAA president?
So I am not. That's the one. Okay. One of these jobs I did not apply for because it's just people yelling at you the entire time.
To be fair, just so we get this out there, if you want to pay me $2.7 million, Andy, you can yell at me as much as you want, just for the record.
Okay.
Anyway, but these guys that are still not on a campus and are earmuffs NCAA being induced to come to campuses are being induced with a lot of money. In mm-hmm. most cases, more money. Money that is not commensurate with their college accomplishments. That is happening. Six-figure deals, seven-figure deals. There are multiple campuses right now, Andy, where guys are making who aren't even on campus yet are making more money or have more money committed to them than guys who threw for 2,500 to 3,000 yards, 30 touchdowns last year. That's a natural tension. I think
one of those people might have been on the podcast this week.
It's possible. I think, Andy, this will even out over time.
I do too.
More and more players.
This is the market figuring
itself
out.
This is the transition.
But
yes.
It's interesting doing that Texas A&M story. This is what I got from talking to those people behind the scenes. Because the $30 million thing, which obviously they say isn't true, and I believe it's not true.
Yeah, it's too much.
If they'd had $30 million, they would have paid Kenyon Green and DeMarvin Leal to come back.
Yes.
Like, they would have said, whatever your first year NFL salary is, we'll match it or surpass it. And Kenyon Green was the number, 15 pick? The Texans
Something
picked
like
him
that.
In the first round. Leal hasn't been picked yet, but he will be picked at some point in the next couple of days. And those are first-team All-SEC performers. Like, they're proven. They're not a crapshoot like these recruits are. They're worth more. And I think this is one that, the NFL had to figure this out, David. It took until Sam Bradford, really.
Yeah.
That the NFL finally...
The rookie rate skill is like 10 years old, right?
Yeah. Did a CBA that said, you're not going to waste all your money on these rookies... You're going to give the money to the veterans.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's what it was. The rookie salary scale was the people in the union already saying, no, pay us. Don't pay them. They haven't proven anything yet. This won't be a collectively bargained thing, at least not yet. But in college, I am curious to see, do the people running these collectives figure out, wait a second, the ones who've already proven they can play at this level, we should probably take care of them first.
Yeah, I think that's definitely possible. I think a lot of the collectives did, quote unquote, take care of them. But then when the guys that are not on campus yet are getting more money, then it gets a little sticky. Because keeping a guy is less expensive than acquiring a guy. And so that's sort of the tension. Now, I think this tension will only last a few years. I think as the market sorts itself out and, you know, quarterbacks that are
Figure out a way to put some structure into this thing, one way or the other, whether it's make them employees
I don't think we're going to get to the employees. I think the schools.
I think it may be inevitable at a certain point. Maybe. I don't think they're going to get the federal law they want.
Yeah, we'll see. That there are so many hurdles to get to that point that I the current environment is already spicy and interesting enough that it's
but
fascinating.
David,
to see
our
this play
like
out.
Our industry, and mm-hmm. all, and you know, I realize if you're a teacher, then you probably work in a situation where your pay is based on your education and your level of experience. Mm-hmm. But in a lot of other industries, including ours, you're essentially worth whatever someone will pay you.
This is true.
And like our bosses have to know the market. They have to know, they know what we make, obviously, because they decide what we make. But they kind of have to know what everybody makes at SI or ESPN or everywhere else, to make sure that we're being paid fairly and not too little and not too much, because either one's a problem.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what these guys have to figure, these collective people have to figure out. Well, I'd say college administrators, but it's not necessarily them making the decisions.
Yeah, and I think the thing that would be interesting, Andy, I said right when NIL came in, and again, I almost feel naive using the term NIL, but whatever. Well, when players could start making money.
Yes.
One of the things that I said immediately was, well, these first round of guys are going to be paid way too much because the fire hose is on, and then the market will sort itself out. And maybe that's true, Andy. I really am not sure. You know, if you told me now, we're sitting here, this is I guess you're listening to this on April 29th, 2022. If you told me that in 2027, a five-star prospect is still commanding a solid seven digits, I would say, okay, probably. I don't know. Now, where does this move?
I would think it would have to be like a Trevor Lawrence level sure thing.
But Andy, when you have a five-star that's within reach, aren't they all sure things? Isn't that the whole thing with recruiting?
No.
This is the guy that can change our program. And it's different for programs. If a five-star wants to go to Purdue versus Alabama.
Right. I was
going to
say, Alabama doesn't look at it the same way. Because they're like, well, we have other five-stars. You're not special. Yes.
But then it comes into, well, how much money? I think, Ari and I have talked about this. How much money would it take the gap between what Purdue's willing to pay you and what Alabama's willing to pay you if you want to go there?
Well, I think we're seeing that. You know, if indeed that deal that Stuart Mandel wrote about is Nico at Tennessee, well, Tennessee probably has to pay more than Alabama or Georgia or Ohio
State.
Much
more. We don't have the data to know.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we're going to have the data because getting the numbers on these deals is difficult. And there's not a lot of them out there because they're all private.
Listen, David, the first time we're going to see an unredacted version of one of these contracts is going to be in discovery for a lawsuit.
I think you're right.
And it's going to happen. That's going to happen. And what's interesting with this Miami thing, so Isaiah Wong has a deal with LifeWallet. With the LifeWallet is the company. It's a product, I guess, an app that is supposed to store your medical records. So if something happens to you, and you have to, you know, go to the hospital, I guess they can see all of your medical records in one place.
And also, Andy, but if you just have one drop of blood, they can diagnose you for
100. Wow. Nice.
No, anyway.
I think you can put records on an app. Theranos was a bit of a pipe dream. But no, I mean, clearly this is a vehicle to pay these guys for endorsements.
Well, but Andy, if we're getting down
Isaiah,
to brass tacks,
so what I'm saying is Isaiah Wong has a deal already.
Yes.
He's just not happy with that deal right now.
Well, but what we're talking about is if he is LeBron James coming into his second year of college, well, guess what, Andy? you're going to renegotiate that deal. Exactly. The question that Miami has to answer, well, I say Miami, you know, John Ruiz and whatever, is he good enough to pay him more than we agreed to?
That's,
because you can, that's and right part now of this, it seems like the answer is no.
That's all part of this, too. I had a friend who was arguing with me over this and like, well, what if they don't want to renegotiate the deal? I'm like, that's their choice.
Yeah.
It's a business decision and he leaves.
He can go play at Wake Forest and probably score 20 points a game and see him in the ACC tournament and try to knock him out. And we're going to write about it and it's going to be very fun. And he's probably going to make a good amount of money and everyone's going to be fine. Yeah. And again, you know, this is the free market, Andy. And I think you add the free transfers in there. Again, if you're a university and you're not going to pay players, you don't get to say where they go. You don't get to have
A lot of people who hate the way we feel about this because we're pretty sort of laissez-faire about this. Like, I don't care how much they get paid. I don't care if they're paid to go to a certain school. I don't care if they're induced. It doesn't matter to me. Like, I've always said, let whoever wants to pay him, pay him. And the market will sort itself out.
Again, the people who, quote-unquote, are angry about this or hate how this is going, guess where they're going to be on Saturday afternoons in September?
They're going to be at the games.
Yes, they're going to be watching the games.
But my point was this. Almost all of us have done this in our careers.
Yes.
One way or the other. Now, I don't think I've never refused to work to get a higher paycheck. Yeah. But I have come in and said, I'm worth more than this.
Yeah.
And I have been told, no, you're not. Get back to work. And I have been told, yes, you're right.
Yeah.
Here's more. Please don't leave. So it's this is not any different than millions of individual situations across the country every single day.
Yes. And I think, Andy, you know, I think this is a good life philosophy, a good approach. Know your worth does not always mean constantly ask for more.
Right.
It just means know your worth. And
it means
and
when you have leverage, use it. And Isaiah Wong, for the next couple days, has leverage.
Yeah, and I'm guessing he's in a situation where he probably doesn't want to leave Miami, but he probably knows, because he has an agent, and agents know what's going on around there, that he can probably make more elsewhere. And he's probably going to. Maybe not as much as maybe he could make by staying in Miami if they agree to pony up, but Andy, right now, it doesn't seem like they're going to. And this is going to be really, really interesting. I don't think the public... I do think the public nature of this probably is a little short-sighted on his front. I think it's probably not a great look.
I was shocked. Like, my mouth dropped open when I saw the tweet for the Nigel Pack NIL deal. Like, this is how much it's worth. And it's interesting because I talked to Hugh Hathcock the following day. Hugh Hathcock is the Florida donor. He gave the single largest donation to the Florida Athletic Department in its history at $12.6 million. And he also decided that the collective that was working on behalf of Florida, of, you know, I guess adjacent to Florida, I never know the right words to say with this, but...
Fortunately, I'm not an NCAA cop either.
Yeah, he decided that they weren't raising money fast enough, so he was going to start raising it. He threw in $1 million of his own money and then started calling the richest of his Florida booster friends and saying, all right, the war chest needs to be filled, up to us to fill it. And I was talking to him and he said, yeah, I want this out there. I want everybody to know we're doing this. Now,
well, I don't think he wants to
give the details of individual deals with players, but he wants the players to know that it's there.
I think the interesting thing, Andy, that I suspect that this is going eventually, and I think this is a genius move if a coach does this, but I was talking to somebody who said that they had talked to a coach who was asking them if it would be legal if their wife gave $1 million to their university's collective. Now, that you would want to do publicly if you're sure it's legal, because that only says, hey, I'm first in line.
We're in.
Come on back. We're doing this. And then in the set, you know, you earn a lot of goodwill, you know, all those things. I think we're going to see that within the next year.
Do you know, David, do you remember that there was a coach who actually brought up at his conference meetings that coaches should be able to create a fund to give money to their players?
Was it Spurrier?
It was. It was Spurrier.
Spurrier's been beating that drum for decades, man. Yeah. He's been the players should get everything that they can for a while now.
Yeah, he did it. He was coached at South Carolina at the time. I believe it was in the Steven Garcia era at South Carolina.
Yeah, that sounds right.
When he said it. And in fact, it may have been pitched at a moment when there was some Steven Garcia drama going on. So that may have been the shiny object to hold in front of us to keep us from asking about that. But it's funny that's where, because I had not thought about it that way with the spouse of a coach. Now, you could say, where's the money coming from? But I mean, if you have a joint bank account, that's as much as the coach's money.
I was talking about this. So you could be the question is, even if it's a coach, right? Are you acting as a coach in theory? Because
or are you acting as a booster?
Well, that's the question is, because technically it doesn't really matter who is funding the collective in theory. Now, I think that's true, Andy. I have not worked in compliance, so don't quote me on
that. See, it's funny because Stuart Mandel and I were tweeting at each other about this today, and Stuart was talking about how basically they didn't need to make this cockamamie system. They could have made it more direct, but
it's so stupid.
Yeah, the old guard wanted guardrails or whatever you want to call them without even thinking. Everyone will find every loophole. Nobody thought about it. They knew it, but it's funny how it really did sort of honor the time-honored college sports tradition of middlemen and outsourcing. Like, nobody outsources better than college sports.
Yes. Well, Andy, the question that we were talking about with the collectives is, as I was saying, explain to me, and if people want to get mad about this, explain to me the difference, okay? If your local Habitat for Humanity charity is saying, well, this kid is a junior in high school, his family, you know, where we've nominated them to really get this house that we need or that they need, that they would, it would mean a lot to them. I don't know how Habitat for Humanity chooses who gets their homes, but whatever. And let's say that this 11th grader also happens to be a 5-star recruit. Well, what's the difference in that versus a coach giving $1 million to Habitat for Humanity, their local chapter, who's about to build this kid a house? What's the difference?
I mean, it's going to be a nice house for one, but
yeah,
I don't know. That's the thing with me is there was no way to regulate this once they let it get out of hand.
Yeah.
Once they let the state start making laws. And this is what I said all along. And I said this back during the O'Bannon case. If they do not start negotiating with the players and start giving more to the players, someone's going to take this. Because you don't want the government telling you how you have to do something. That's when it gets really complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what is this but the government telling you how to do something? You have this patchwork of state laws that's deciding how all of this works at various places.
And changing every week in every state.
Correct.
By the way, it's impossible to keep track of.
If they had been willing, the schools being they, if they had been willing to negotiate and to make a deal and to give a little all along, then maybe they wouldn't have kept getting dragged into court. And maybe they wouldn't be in this situation because this is the confluence of the states making these NIL laws and the Supreme Court issuing the Alston ruling, which makes the schools afraid to enforce the existing NCAA rules or make new ones. So this is they've brought this all on themselves, which I think is hilarious because
I also think it's hilarious.
They did not have to do this to themselves. They could have given an inch at some point in time, but they decided to dig in their heel.
Well, again, you know, for decades, Andy, everyone in the sport has had to pretend like, oh, well, if players can capitalize off their name, we need to go back, Andy. We need to have a dramatic reading of some NIL quotes from like 2010. We can go back and LexisNexis it and find some of these, because I guarantee you we'll find some incredible ones. But we've had to hear this nonsense, Andy. Well, if college football has a playoff, it's going to ruin the sport, Andy. Well, if players can monetize their name, image, and likeness, everyone's going to check out. It's going to ruin the sport, Andy. Everything's going to be terrible. And now you're hearing some of the same rhetoric around players getting more things. And, you know, ultimately, Andy, for all the good that I don't even want to use NIL, but for all the good that players being able to be paid has brought, they're still probably not getting market value.
Yeah. Although, well, a couple of recruits are probably getting more than they're worth.
Yeah, some might. Some are. Yes. But the general guy is not, right?
Yeah, and it, I think probably the market continues to move until it finds the level. That tends to be how they move.
And I still think they're not
artificially restrained.
I want to stress, too, as we're having this conversation, because a lot of people don't like this. A lot of people are uncomfortable with this. A lot of people, and it's fine. People don't like change. Whatever. 30,000-foot view, Andy. They're still going to play games.
Yes.
They're still going to wear the uniforms. There's still going to be 100,000 people in the stands. All this other stuff is just a more fair and equitable universe.
Well, I answered a mailbag question like this, because when I look at my mailbag questions, it's a lot of them come from the same type of person, people who are really deeply geeky about college football, just like I am. Mm-hmm. And so you think about the rules and you think about the structure and that sort of thing. And so it was another one of those, you know, tell me how this is not going to ruin the sport type questions. Or he said, tell me what you're going to do to keep people from checking out. And I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to have football games on Saturdays in large stadiums, and people who went to those universities are going to come, and they're going to engage in cheers that might be weird or salacious or just stupid, but that they've been doing for 100 years, and there's probably going to be marching bands, and those games will be televised, and everyone will watch. Because for every one person who asked one of those questions, there are 100 who do not care about any of the regulatory stuff and just want to watch the games.
And for the and Andy, I'm skeptical that these people exist, so maybe I'm talking to a vocal minority. But the crowd who says, "Well, you know, I'm checking out. I can't buy this. The players, I thought they were playing for the love of the game, all this other stuff, whatever you want to say."
Those are the people who say, "I haven't watched a game in 6 months," yes. And you go further down their Twitter feed and they're live tweeting the game.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, Andy, I haven't watched a college football game in over 3 months. So
yeah, me neither. But anyway, I'm not happy about it.
But that crew, okay. My question to you would be this. Well, two questions, if we're fair. Number one, why does players getting money or living in a nice apartment or having a nice car or being able to invest or buy a home in college? Andy, can you imagine being able to purchase a home easily?
That's the
at
one
20?
Thing that blows my mind. Like
it's insane.
Having enough money to put a 20% down payment on a house,
yes,
coming out of college would have changed the financial trajectory of my life.
Everyone's lives.
Yeah. It would have been amazing. It would have been incredible. Yeah.
So anyway, why does that bug you so much? And my second question is, why didn't it bug you when the Big Ten signed a $1 billion TV deal, or when Nick Saban signs a $10 million contract? Why is he allowed to get paid, or the school's allowed to get paid insane amounts of money and not the players? What is the difference?
Well,
and why does that make it so much different for you? I truly don't understand that mindset.
I think for some people, we know the answer.
Yes.
It's who gets the money now versus who,
yes,
got all the money before. But I don't think that's everybody.
No.
I think for some people, they just haven't really thought it through. They don't like change. They're not thinking about it critically. It's just, this is not what I had when I was a teenager, and therefore it must be bad.
Yeah, I think so. But I think if you feel that way, and maybe I'm preaching to the vocal minority, but if you feel that way, honestly, think about why. Why do you feel that way?
Well, I mean, isn't that what Brett Kavanaugh wrote in his concurring opinion in the Alston case? When he said, who picks a restaurant based on how poorly the waiters are compensated? Like,
yes, that's made my eggs for the love of the game.
Yeah.
Well, Andy, and I think too, for that same crowd who longs for the college sports days of yore, in the current political climate, no one on either side of the aisle can agree on anything except for the entirety of college sports is unlawful and unethical
right,
and unconstitutional. That's right. The one thing.
Because the left says you're violating workers' rights, and the right says,
yes,
you're artificially constraining free markets. Like, or
that's
open
the one
markets.
Thing. And here you are, you know, mythical college sports boycotter. you know, it defies logic.
It's a great needle to thread.
It is.
it's
again,
incredible.
I just think this doesn't affect you. It doesn't affect you. It affects these players whose lives are going to be fundamentally different.
But here, my thing about it is, look, you can be mad about it all you want. I had a guy ask me on Twitter tonight, you know, is it okay to not be okay with the way some of these players are leveraging and also not be okay with coaches who leave in the middle of their contracts? I'm like, yeah.
I mean, I guess.
It's okay to feel however you want.
I will say, Andy, if you're coaching, it's not okay to not be okay with this. You better get on board or get out of the way. I talked to Brian Harsin about this today. I was asking him a couple questions, and I was going to talk to him about it off the record, just about what he thinks about this everything changed and collectives. And he said, no, I'll talk about it on the record. And he had two really interesting things to say. One is, he said, you know what's going to come out of this is we're going to see a lot more business majors, which I think is good, which I actually think is probably true. I hadn't thought about that. You know, if you've got all this money, you want to understand how to better use it and how to invest and build companies and do all these things. And, you know, I asked him, well, how do you feel about guys coming to your campus with, you know, 6- and 7-figure deals? What do you think about that? He said, well, why not? What you know, if you've got that
he
opportunity.
He just wants some of the guys that can fetch a 7-figure deal.
He does, but all the coaches should be. These coaches that are saying, well, we're not going to do that, or that's not what I kept for.
Get on board,
you're,
baby.
You're not long for this world if you want to hang on to that branch, because that branch is going to snap in a hurry.
Well, let's talk about that, because on Monday we had the coach that I think is probably the way he coaches is probably the best way to handle players in this age of the transfer portal, and that's Dave Aranda from Baylor. And this week he did something that I'm not sure a lot of coaches would have done. And I actually wrote about this situation in my story, but got it backward. So they had Jerry Bohannon, who was their starting quarterback last year, Blake Shapen, who replaced an injured Bohannon in the Big 12 championship game, was the offensive player of the game in the Big 12 championship game. And Bohannon came back and won the Sugar Bowl for him. And they split reps with the first team. And I wrote my story, you know, if Shapen, because Baylor hadn't lost anybody who actually played. And I said, the one guy they might lose, they could lose Blake Shapen, because if he's not the starter, he's proven probably that he's worthy of starting somewhere. So
I'd want him to start for my team, yeah.
Well, Dave Aranda and Jeff Grimes, their offensive coordinator, clearly evaluated the spring, decided they wanted Blake Shapen to start for their team. But where they diverged from what I think other coaches would have done is, instead of saying, no, we're not going to make a decision till fall practice,
and handcuffing the quarterback to the program.
Right. They said, no, guys, here we go. We're going to start Blake, which means Bohannon can get in the transfer portal, and Bohannon can start somewhere else too. Like, your alma mater, David. Your alma mater, Missouri, could use somebody right now.
They're giving it a run for its money. I'll tell you that. I talked to people from Missouri this week that definitely feel that way. But I think it's, you know, again, I think Shapen's a better player. I think Bohannon's a really good player who can start for a bunch of people. I think he'd be obviously a good fit at Missouri. He'd be a good fit at a bunch of places. Really good player. But again, I think, you know, Aranda is one of just those guys who does it right. You know, there's a bunch of coaches in this sport, Andy, that every time you talk to somebody, if their name comes up, you get 8 stories about how they're just a piece of trash. And then there's coaches in this business who you've never heard say a negative word about ever, anyone in the history of the world. And Aranda's one of those guys, the latter group. And it's because of things like this. You can talk about, I'm players first. Oh, I care about my kids. You can say all that stuff. But when you actually make decisions where it costs you something for a kid to benefit,
right, cause
that's when I believe you.
They could have used both those guys on their roster.
Clearly. Their team is worse now because they don't have Gary Bohannon on it.
They didn't. I mean, Bohannon gets hurt, and they clearly needed him both last year.
Yeah.
They could need them both this year. Now, I will say, because the one situation I could kind of compare it to from the old system was 2013 at Florida. Will Muschamp had Jeff Driscoll and Jacoby Brissett. And he said, look, I'm starting Jeff. Jacoby, I'm not going to string you along. If you want to transfer, you go ahead. And Jacoby transferred to NC State to start. Now, he had to start sitting out that year so that he could play the following season. But While that was happening in 2013, Jeff Driscoll breaks his leg in week three, and they didn't really have anybody behind him. And it got real ugly, and they went 4-8. Kyron Drones was the third team guy in the spring this year. I watched him practice last week. He's got a strong arm. He's a big dude. It looks like they probably had some confidence in him as well. Like, knowing that they were going to lose one of the two, whoever they didn't pick, they were probably okay with it because they felt like this guy can play too.
Mm-hmm. I'll be interested to see the coaches that navigate this, Andy. It's not easy. And like I said, you may have to make some decisions that hurt you in the short term. But guess what, Andy? If I'm a mom of a kid who's really interested in Baylor and you tell me you've got my kid's best interest at heart, I'm going to fight for your kid. Guess what? That might pay off down the line.
Well,
I'm going to say, well, hey, maybe
Brock
you really
did. On this very podcast about a month or two ago, say Matt Campbell's going to be fine. He's going to kick ass, but the transfer portal is going to expose a lot of coaches.
Yeah. 100%. And I think the thing that when that conversation comes up is, well, that means we have to coddle kids. We can't coach kids. Mm-mm. Tough. No, yeah. That's in recruiting. What kind of kids do you want? What kind of people do you want in your program? If you bring a kid to your campus and then you realize the first time that you have to raise your voice at him, he's in the transfer portal, that's on you. You brought him to your campus. You need to know who these guys are and how
you coach
them.
And I think that's the advantage.
I don't buy the coddling argument at all.
And that's the advantage that Ohio State, Alabama, and Georgia have had for a while over other programs. Clemson, too. They had gotten it to a point where they were so talented that they almost had a self-selecting sample of recruits, where if you didn't have that kind of attitude, you wouldn't even want to play there. So you wouldn't even pursue playing there. So they're getting guys who want to compete.
It's like they would ask, I can't remember. I feel like, because ESPN basically lives at Alabama, and I feel like they would ask, I hear it every year, or maybe it was a few years ago, somebody asked Alabama players, you know, Nick Saban, you don't see a lot of joy in him. Is it fun playing here? And somebody said, winning's fun.
Jonathan Allen.
Yes.
Jonah Williams said it too.
Yeah. And so is getting drafted in the first round. That's also fun, as we saw tonight, Andy, to bring this pod full circle.
Exactly.
Winning championships and being first-round picks, that's really fun.
Yeah.
And it pays well, too. So
it does.
Pays better than ever in college and in the pros.
I don't know, David. Playing for one of those that wants to get into that club might pay pretty well, too, now. So.
You may be right. You may be right.
The question is, how do you handle your salary, your quote unquote salary cap? It's not a real salary cap here. It's how much money you actually have, because it still doesn't grow on trees, last I checked. And you still have to decide how you're going to portion it out. You just got to figure out.
I can't remember if we talked about this on this pod, Andy. I can't remember if we did or not. But I think as the wall between collectives and schools becomes clearer and how much you can interact or not interact. I had a coach in the SEC tell me that he feels like eventually we're going to see like a GM of collectives on a staff. Mm-hmm. Pretty frequently, that says, okay, we have this much money, we're going to divvy out.
Well,
this much,
I think if you're a coach, you want that, because the last thing you want as a college coach, where you're used to having total control, is an NFL head coach, NFL GM scenario, where the head of the collective gets crossed with you and maybe doesn't believe in you anymore. Because that's what everybody's happy now. It's all just started. So
I know when you get coached on the hot seat, I don't know how that's going to look.
The guy from the collective's like, oh, I'm still going to be here next year. I don't know if you are. So we're going to go after these players, whether you want them or not.
Yeah. Andy, this is where it comes back to. Ultimately, I'm glad I don't have to compete in college football and I can just write about it, because this is the toughest time to try and run a program in our lifetimes, and it's the most interesting and the easiest time.
Do you know who I have faith in to navigate this more than anyone else?
The Athletic, Andy.
No, well, that too. Nick Saban. Like,
yeah,
he's telling high school coaches about a month ago that he's re-energized by all this stuff. Like now he's got new puzzles to solve. That would scare the hell out of me if I'm another coach in the SEC to hear him say that.
It has to. It has to. I mean, they've launched their collective. We'll see what that eventually evolves into and how that eventually plays out. But it's just, we've talked about this. We've texted about this. I talked to people on our staff. I'm getting ready to go on paternity leave, but I have about 150 story ideas that I want to do. But there's just so many things.
And when baby oven comes along, you're going to be like, use all the leverage you have.
Yeah, exactly.
If I can give you one piece of advice, use all your leverage.
And there are just so many like offshoots of all this. And as we see it evolve and as the games start and some tensions with guys on camp, it's going to be fascinating, and I'm glad I don't have to coach or be an administrator. I'm very glad that we are on this side of it. At this time, it doesn't pay quite as well, but it still pays pretty well, and we'll see how it goes.
I am very interested because what we're seeing in basketball at Miami, we're going to see in football.
It's coming.
And it's going to be crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the world we live in. Welcome to 2022. David Oven, thank you very much. Everybody enjoy the rest of the draft, enjoy your weekend, and we will talk.